So Phil Weiss, he's going to be on talking about some of this stuff. Nancy Youssef is going to be here. She's at McClatchy Newspapers, of course, reporting from Cairo. And she's going to be on to talk about what's going on in Libya here. She's got a piece, U.S. evacuates Libyan embassy amid growing unrest. This is from the other day, the 26th. Same difference anyway. So everything there is falling apart. And, you know, I was just... a little footnote here. I'll move on back to Israel in a second. But I did see on TV, they had some expert. I don't know who he was, but he really knew what he was talking about. He was some kind of professor or something rather than just a pundit or a hack or even a reporter, you know? And they were asking him about what was going on in Libya. And so he was explaining how, yeah, ever since Gaddafi's left, it's just a giant power vacuum and a bunch of warring militias and this and that and all that. And the hairdo, the blow-dried news actor, reader lady on the CNN there, I believe I was subjecting myself to CNN at the time. It could have been MSNBC. I think it was CNN. And she says, right, which is why a lot of people are saying it's time for the international community to do something about all this instability. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Bye, she says to him. That's the end of the interview. She, the hairdo lady, you know, with the earpiece, the news reader, gets the last word. And that is that, well, there's a crisis in Libya, so I guess we've got to invade it. When it was invading it that created the crisis in the first place. No irony, no shame. No mention of the fact that, you know, you could go down to the... I'm sure they've got the web archive somewhere, the video archive. You can find the very same hairdo lady saying, oh, we got to protect the people of Libya from Gaddafi. Let's overthrow Gaddafi. It'd be so easy. We can do it from the air. Like Kosovo. Not like that messy Iraq war. It'll be clean and easy and nice and save the people. Oh, but yeah, you know, that's why a lot of people are saying the international community is going to have to do something. Meaning what? Build a nation. Build an army. Anyway, the place is falling apart. But those are the breaks. Those are the consequences. That's what you get. I don't know how anybody in their right mind, and I don't care about partisanship or anything else, how could any sane person have supported intervening in Libya? Yeah, let's overthrow the secular dictator with the clean-shaven chin. Really? You're going to overthrow the secular dictator with the clean-shaven chin on behalf of a bunch of veterans of Al-Qaeda in Iraq? Who are battle-hardened because they just finished years of training fighting our guys there. Good idea. Great idea. Oh, yeah, we'll make a no-fly zone, they said. And even then, and you can go back and double-check me in the records, man, it's all there from 2011. It was such a lie, and I said over and over before the invasion, if they get a no-fly zone, because Obama dithered for a little while there before he went ahead, long enough to let the Republicans who'd been trying to sell Gaddafi weapons, McCain and Graham, enough time to outflank him on the right and force him to do it. But in that time he was dithering and the argument was going on, I was saying, you know, if you give him a no-fly zone, what are you doing? You're conceding the argument that the people, because never mind who's who, the people of Libya are not safe from their dictator as long as he's a dictator. So, no calculus involved, not even algebra, just simple arithmetic. If they claim they need a no-fly zone to protect the people of Libya from Gaddafi, if that's two, then three is Gaddafi has to go. That's it. Next step. Simple as that. And then, of course, that was right. That's exactly what they said. Hey, look, you let us have the no-fly zone. You concede that what that means is the people of Libya will never be safe as long as Gaddafi's there. We got to do it. There you go. They did it. They spread the war on down to Mali and made problems in Nigeria much worse. Spread the war the weapons and the Mujahideen onto Syria to make that whole problem worse this whole time since, too. And now what are they going to do? Build up an army? Give them purple-fingered elections? Anyway, they can't get the independent militia groups to, turn in their rifles and or join up in one single army. Who's going to make them? The U.S. Army? Or what's the other alternative? The U.S. government is just going to accept total chaos there? I mean, I guess it's fine as long as there's no coverage of it. In fact, as I've said before on the show, I really worry about, even talking about the crisis going on in Libya at all. Maybe just telling the truth about it is actually adding to the war propaganda. Just like this idiot on CNN says, oh my God, there's something going wrong in Libya? Well, that's why so many are saying now that something has to be done about that. Oh man, I don't want to be at that talking point. I'm trying to say that's why you shouldn't have intervened then, and that's why more intervention could only make things worse now. That's exactly what we need, right? A bunch of American combat forces on the ground there fighting these militias in Libya, turning the whole thing into a giant magnet for Al-Qaeda and the Islamic Maghreb and every other Ansar al-Sharia and every wannabe bin Ladenite group in North Africa to have a whole new massive training ground to fight the Americans in. And I guess, with their backs to the Sahara Desert, it'd be a lot of fun for the U.S. Marines to go ahead and win a few battles for a change. But, I don't know, man. Seems like a problematic problem. The Eli Lake, I hate to quote Eli Lake. I know he only writes with an agenda of bad people. And in this case, he was writing with an agenda of bad people. He was saying, look at the disgrace of America getting kicked out of Libya. The CIA and the Special Forces are mad. They were in their training. They got their base sacked, and then Obama pulled them out of there. And the training mission was left unfinished and all that kind of stuff. So, oops, break time here a second. Hey, Al Scott here for MyHeroesThink.com. They sell beautiful 7-inch busts of libertarian heroes, Ludwig von Mises, Murray Rothbard, Ron Paul, and Harry Brown. These finely crafted statues from MyHeroesThink.com make excellent decorations for your desktop at work, bookends for your shelves, or gifts for that special individualist in your life. They're also all available in colors now, too. Of course, gold, silver, or bronze. Coming soon, Hayek, Hazlitt, Carlin. Use promo code Scott Horton and save $5 at MyHeroesThink.com. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show here. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. Hey, I got a new sponsor on the show. It's Darren's Coffee with two R's. Darren's Coffee. It's really good. He sent me some and I've been drinking it. And it's really good. And if you want there to be a show, then you got to support the sponsors or there's no show. That's it. Because he ain't going to pay me unless he's making money selling coffee to you. And so you got to buy his coffee. Darren'sCoffee.com. It's good. It comes in the mail. And if you use the promo code Scott, then you pay no shipping. Even if you got like a whole pallet full. Which is a lot of coffee to get at one time, I know. But rhetorically speaking, no shipping. No matter how much you get. So just use promo code Scott there at Darren's Coffee. That's with two R's. Darren'sCoffee.com. And should be, if everything works out, he's going to be on the show later on and talk a little bit about that. Because got to pay the bills or there's no show. That's the deal. It's capitalism. And I'm not very good at being a capitalist for an ideological libertarian. But it is what it is and I'm trying. So there you go. Also, by the way, you should donate to the Council for the National Interest, and you should also donate to the Future Freedom Foundation and subscribe to the Future Freedom, their monthly newsletter. And you should certainly, if you have any money at all to invest, you got to pay attention to Mike Swanson, because that guy, he's rich because he's smart, for real. That's a sign on my dad's desk. If you're so smart, why ain't you rich? Well, Mike Swanson, he's rich because he's smart. That's the answer to that. WallStreetWindow.com, he tells you everything he's doing in the markets, which amounts to good advice to you to follow. WallStreetWindow.com, and read his great book, The War State, all about the rise of the national security state after World War II in the Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy administrations. And then, if you want hateful anti-government propaganda to put on the back of your truck, you go to libertystickers.com. If you need stickers for your band or your business or any other thing, same company, it's thebumpersticker.com, thebumpersticker.com. Patronize them. Please? Okay, good. And then, of course, there's also my other newest sponsor is Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc., and they will help you buy and sell gold. I mentioned Mike Swanson. He sells advice. He doesn't sell gold. Roberts & Roberts, well, and his advice will be buy gold. So that's when you turn over to Roberts & Roberts and buy gold from Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. Well, they don't, you know, they hook you up with those selling the gold. That's the deal. For a very modest price. They do good business there. So, yeah, there you go. And hopefully Darren will be on the show later on to talk a little bit about the coffee and why you ought to buy from him instead of Folgers at the store. I can tell you why. Because I just switched from Folgers from Walgreens to Darren's coffee. And I prefer it. The new stuff, I mean. Yeah. Maxwell House, I hardly knew you. Folgers, bye, man. I got Darren's coffee now. All right. Gaza. Killing kids. Man, there's so much. I guess, you know, in order, the most important thing would be to bring up Jonathan Cook's piece here. Is killing civilians part of Israel's plan? And that'll be part of what I talk with Philip Weiss about later on the show. I think the answer there is yes. I think that pinpoint targeting and collateral damage and heroic Nobel Prize winning restraint and all this kind of stuff is just obfuscation to cover for the deliberate targeting of Palestinian children in order to terrorize their parents. That's what's going on. That's what they're really doing. As Jonathan Cook writes, another day, another UN school hit by Israeli shelling in Gaza. You gotta understand, these UN schools, they're not made out of, solid steel or anything. The only reason people take shelter in them is because it's a UN school, so it's presumably on the don't bomb it list. So it's full of civilian refugees hiding and cowering, people trying to protect their children from, you know, being blown apart to death. And the Israelis keep targeting them and blowing the hell out of them. They keep doing it. I mean, if you were lying about Israel, you couldn't make up things like, yeah, and then they just bomb UN schools full of cowering refugees over and over again. That would be a damned lie if it was a damn lie, but no, it's just the truth. Another day, another UN school hit by Israeli shelling in Gaza. And then they go on TV and they say, well, you know, they're shooting a rocket from there. And even on CNN, there's pushback. Even on CNN, they go, yeah, but, you know, still. Does that mean it's definitely okay every time to go ahead and bomb the school if you know that there are women and children in there? Even if they did shoot a rocket from there. Never mind, they haven't proven that. All their attempted proof so far has fallen apart. That's not even the same building. What are you even talking about? Has been the response for their video footage that they've released so far. But the real answer is they're terrorizing civilians because that's the business that they're in. And as reported in the Daily Beast, which, you know, I don't know, maybe, I guess I have to assume that Noah Schachman is this guy's editor, right? Noah Schachman, formerly of foreignpolicy.org, I believe he's the editor at the Daily Beast. And he's publishing this guy, Jesse Rosenfeld. That's not a very Palestinian Islamic extremist sounding name, I don't think. And he's reporting on Israel's campaign to send Gaza back to the Stone Age. The power station, the port, government buildings, and private homes, all have fallen prey to Operation Protective Edge. I don't know why anyone should feel bound to call these wars, these assaults by their, you know, aggressor military organizations, newspeak, code names. Who gives a crap what they call it, Protective Edge, when it's just a murderous bloodletting? That's all it is, Operation Murderous Bloodletting. How about that? And he reported the day before, of course, that Israel is shrinking Gaza by 40%. That buffer zone is Israel now. Yeah, that's what they're doing. They're just razing all those homes. The buffer zone, of course, is where all the best farmland is. And they're just taking it. And, you know, it's funny. Who was it that asked yesterday? Someone on Twitter or someone on the show or something? I think someone on Twitter said, yeah, but Scott, they're not conspiring with the dictatorship in Egypt to open Rafah and to chase all the Palestinians into Egypt. So what are they gonna? What are they trying to do? I mean, they can't kill them all. They can't drive them all into the sea. But they're not really trying to push them into Egypt and then lock them out either. They're just torturing them for fun, maybe. You know, oh, after this, they'll all blame Hamas for getting them into this mess, right? Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. Darren's Coffee. Order now at darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and save $2. Darrenscoffee.com. All right, y'all, welcome back. Well, I screwed something up, man. Maybe it's a time zone problem. I was supposed to have Nancy Youssef on the show. But I can't quite get a hold of her, but I don't know. Maybe in 15 minutes. I got a pretty wide open show today, actually, so hopefully we'll be able to, well, anyway, I'm sure we'll hear from her in a few minutes, and then we'll have her on for at least 10, and that'll be good. Need to know about what's going on in Libya there. All right, so, yeah, I'm jotting down questions I've got. Nancy, what's this? The Pentagon, Tunisia, Osprey helicopters and F-16s. Okay, yeah, so that's Nancy Youssef and McClatchy newspapers here at Miami Herald. Hey, McClatchy, put up a paywall. I just read all your articles over at the Miami Herald site instead of yours. Really smart of you. U.S. evacuates Libyan embassy amid growing unrest. Nancy Youssef, so we'll be talking with her about that here in just a minute. So, okay, well, good then. Let's go back to what's going on in the Gaza Strip. First of all, Shira Frenkel, we talked about this yesterday. Over the weekend, John Donison and Shira Frenkel both put out tweets saying that the Israeli government is telling them that, yeah, we know that Hamas didn't do the kidnapping. That was the supposed spark. It was the excuse that Netanyahu took advantage of to launch this war against Gaza. And yes, he was bombing and killing Hamas members in Gaza with bombs from the air. I said bombing already, didn't I? With airstrikes on the 6th of June before the first rocket. Was it July? Anyway, it was the 6th. Yeah, July. Before the first rocket was fired. On the 7th. So, there you go. But Shira Frenkel, she has written for BuzzFeed all along that this was in doubt. Max Blumenthal, of course, also wrote about how it was in doubt. There was a profile of the prime suspects in Al Monitor that described them and in great detail as a breakoff group from Hamas and not under the control of the Hamas leadership really at all. And So anyway, everybody wondered, hey, where's your write-up on this? Nice tweets. Where's the beef, you know? So here it is, finally. Sheriff Frinkle was published yesterday at BuzzFeed.com. And no, it's not a list of cute pictures of cats. It's good journalism. It's well done piece here by Sheriff Frankel. Israeli intelligence officers doubt Hamas involvement in incident that sparked Gaza war. That served as the excuse, of course. But anyway. And then speaking of Sheriff Frankel, you should know that she also has an article about the UN school in Gaza. And I think this is really important as an example of how the PR works. It's really simple stuff. Again, you know, these pundit types always like to sound smart by using jargon like calculus and optics and atmospherics and all this kind of crap. But it's all just stupid. It's ridiculous. It makes them sound stupid to me trying to sound smart when they're not smart. All this stuff is really simple. And so, for example, what happened when an explosion hit a UN school in Gaza, as the headline puts it, is the Israelis shot an explosion at the UN school in Gaza. That's what happened, and they killed 16 people. That was the other day. That's not the one from last night. That's the one from the other day. And the Israelis took credit for it. They didn't deny it. They said, yeah, we blasted this target. Forgot their exact words, but they tweeted it out. Social media. IDF spokesperson on Twitter, official account, said, yeah, we did it. And then they tried to lie and say, oh, no, we didn't do it. And then later on they said, well, you know what we did was shoot one artillery shell at the Gaza school, but here's some fake footage of a rocket being fired from a different school somewhere else. And anyway, here it is hitting the courtyard. And so there. No people were killed. And if anybody was killed, then I guess the Palestinians just faked it. And they brought all their dead bodies that they'd had, that they'd been saving up for their telegenic moment. And they brought all their dead bodies to the school and then from there to the hospital in order to pretend that they had all been killed and wounded in a strike on the hospital. And now, so you're saying to me, come on, Scott Wharton, that sounds stupid. Well, go read Sheriff Frankel's article. That's the way it happened, and it is stupid. But so then the question is why? Who do they think they're fooling with this crap? And the point is not that it's effective necessarily at fooling anyone other than those most desperate to be fooled, most desperate to stay on team whatever Israel's doing, that kind of thing. For the rest of us, or for the people who aren't paying that much attention at all, what it serves to do is confuse. Well, it distracts. For those of us who have work to do, it's a distraction that there's some kind of pretended dispute over who bombed the damn school. Oh, yeah, no, I'm sure it was just, you know, what, 4 or 5 errant rockets in a row accidentally misfired and hit the damn school, huh? You know, like that old Rage Against the Machine song, "You're trying to tire me." That's what it is. And for the people who aren't really familiar, they're just trying to confuse the issue. Well, I don't know. I heard maybe it was in dispute about what had happened there and whatever, whatever. It takes something that's quite clear. Israel shoots high explosives at cowering refugees in a United Nations school and tries to make it complicated. Turns it, in fact, into a thing that takes 1,200 words for Sheriff Frankel to straighten out for you at BuzzFeed.com. And she does. She straightens it out. And what happened was the Israelis did it, and then they try to confuse the issue and tire us all with their crap. That's the story. And of course, like I said, all because, and as they admit, and here, see, I screwed up and I ran out of time on one of the segments yesterday and I didn't get to the quote. I screwed up the damn quote. But here it is from, again, the Daily Beast, which I believe means Noah Schachman, editor, which I give him credit. I like Noah Schachman. He's not flawless or anything, but he does a good job a lot of time. But anyway, here's the quote from the Daily Beast from, again, this is no Ku Klux Klan member or Palestinian. This is a reporter named Jesse Rosenfeld reporting for you here. And he says, According to Hebrew University political scientist and longtime analyst of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, Iran Ezrahi, with or without the phrase scorched earth, the idea does have a certain logic. Ezrahi says there is a military and political calculation behind this devastation. Some in the Israeli government believe it will create enough Palestinian suffering so that Gazans will rise up against Hamas or force the leaders to come to terms with Israel when they come out of hiding. See? They're targeting the civilians to create enough suffering to get them to change their mind as to who they voted for the last time the Israelis had, you know, held an election for them. And in effect, at least, I don't know if it was deliberate. I'm not really accusing them of it being deliberate. But in effect, at least, the Israelis rigged it so that Hamas would win. They did everything they could to marginalize Fatah and the Palestinian Authority before it. And including, and I'm sorry, I know I'm beating a dead horse with this, but not everybody knows it, and it seems important to me. They withheld all the tax revenue from the PLO. So all the PLO, all the whatever low-level government services they provided at all, in terms of, you know, traffic cops and healthcare and education stuff, all completely dried up before the election. And then they funneled a bunch of guns and tried to do a coup in 06 that led to Hamas seizing all of Gaza. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at councilforthenationalinterest.org. All right, y'all, welcome back. All right, this is a dang show. Yeah. So, hey, listen, Peter Beinart, who you might remember from lying into the Iraq War and being really, really sorry about it ever since, former editor from the New Republic. Oh, man, how Rhett's did the damn paywall thing to me. Oh, you know what? I don't really need the Beinart thing because I got the quote somewhere else. Same kind of quote. You know, he really did a better job of making these points for me. Dang it. Anyway, Rashid Khalidi. No, it wasn't the New Yorker one. It was the London Review of Books one. Oh, I know. I have it here somewhere. Wait a minute. The London Review of Books one. Well, I'll tell you what it is as I find you the quote. I'll describe you the quote. That way to try to spare us a little bit of dead air. Okay, so it's the London Review of Books one. And what it says in it... Man, didn't I put that in the database back there? Oh, for crying out loud. Maybe it's on the front page of antiwar.com already right now. No. I really screwed up. It's the London Review of Books one. It has the quote of Dov Weisglass, who you always hear the quote of Dov Weisglass saying that, our policy is not to starve the Palestinians, but just to keep them on a diet, to keep them hungry, to count their calories and, you know, to torture the children with food. Anyway, well, I got to find this damn thing now. All right, let's see. Sharon, London Review of Books, 2005. Let's see if that does it. Well, let's see if I put it in Google News instead. No. For Christ's sake. So, anyway, the damn quote is, yeah, I know, it's a great live radio show, isn't it? I really suck at it, sorry. But the point is that there's a quote that I didn't realize that they were this upfront about it at the time. But the quote is from Dov Weisglass of, yes, we like to starve Palestinian children for fun and fame. And what he's saying is, well, first of all, he's described as Ariel Sharon's kind of right-hand man, which I didn't really realize, because I didn't know that much about it. But he's explained the so-called withdrawal. Here's the article. Moin Rabbani at the London Review of Books. Israel mows the lawn. And here's what Dove Weissglass, Eminence Greece, to Ariel Sharon, as he's called here. I probably said that wrong, but I don't care. Here's how he explained withdrawing the settlers, the Jewish-Israeli settlers, from the Gaza Strip. He explained it to the newspaper Haaretz. Quote, "The significance of the disengagement plan is the freezing of the peace process. And when you freeze that process, you prevent the establishment of a Palestinian state. And you prevent a discussion on the refugees, the borders, and Jerusalem. Effectively, this whole package called the Palestinian state, with all that it entails, has been removed indefinitely from our agenda. And all this with a U.S. presidential blessing and the ratification of both houses of Congress. The disengagement is actually formaldehyde. It supplies the amount of formaldehyde that is necessary so there will not be a political process with the Palestinians. Understand, formaldehyde as a preservative. It will hold the status quo now." And then you have to wonder whether his split into Kadima, away from Benjamin Netanyahu and Likud, was simply just a scam that him and Netanyahu said, you know, okay, now you pretend to oppose me. Oh no, a unilateral withdrawal, but we must get the Palestinians to concede a lot of things to us before we withdraw from Gaza, Netanyahu pretended to complain. As though that was the argument. And as I've said before, Eric Garris explained this to me back then. Antiwar.com's head guru there said to me, "You see what's happening here? The Israelis in Gaza are really like the settlers there are kind of human shields. The Israeli government can't do their worst to the Gazans because these Israeli Jews are in their way. And now that they're out of the way, the whole place is just going to turn into escape from New York. The prison by the sea." And I say this all the time so that you'll never forget it, and because I'll never forget it, because that's how he said it to me. That's why I can never forget it. This was at the time when Ariel Sharon was saying this is what they were going to do. That they were going to pull the settlers out. And Garris said the next consequence of this immediately will be they will turn all of Gaza into a full-scale prison. That's it. And it's already a prison, kind of, but it'll be full-on lockdown. And got exactly right. Only the towers have fallen. And now, so there you go. I did not realize that Dove Weissglass of, "Yes, we're deliberately limiting the number of calories the Palestinian children are allowed to have," fame from the WikiLeaks. Thank you, Chelsea Manning, American hero doing 35 years in the brig right now, for leaking those documents again. Appreciate that. And so there you go. I mean, what a bunch of great quotes, man. I should save this on one of my little Windows post-it notes. You know that new Windows has little post-it notes? Not even new. Windows 7 has sticky notes, like post-it notes for your desktop. And you can just save great quotes like this. All I can tell you is say Weissglass. He's the only Weissglass I know, so I don't need Dove there. I don't remember. So there you go. The whole point of pulling the settlers out is so that we'll never have to ever compromise and have a Palestinian state at all. You can read that in the London Review of Books. There's the quote. It's Moin Rabbani who wrote the article. It's called "Israel Mows the Lawn." And, you know, I don't know, man. I think, I guess, in any kind of conflict, everybody's going to accuse the others of this, that, and the other kind of dishonesty. But it seems to me just overwhelming the level of dishonesty that the pro-Israel factions must engage in order to make their case. They won't ever acknowledge the fact of what happened to the Palestinians, how they even ended up all rounded up in the Gaza Strip in the first place. They won't ever acknowledge about who broke what ceasefire, about what level of lockdown, about whether all Palestinians are Hamas or aren't they or what. They lie about everything. They lie about the very even fact that the occupation exists, the disputed territories. They're not disputed. Somebody mugs you, it's not a disputed question of whether they rightfully own your wallet or not. They don't. They may possess it, but they're in the wrong, and they'll stay in the wrong that way if they live to be 90 years old with your wallet in their desk drawer. Same damn thing. And of course, and the part that they never... I don't know how this goes so unacknowledged all along. It's so simple to just catch people up real quick. Hey, listen, if you're new to the subject and you're not really aware, the West Bank here, or this side of the map, and a little bitty Gaza Strip here, this side of the map, they already lost. They were conquered back in 1967. And ever since then, they've been occupied by the foreign power that kicked their ass. So you might just say, oh, well, that's tough in wartime or whatever your argument is after that. Fine, whatever. But at least those are the facts, okay? Palestine is not the country next door fighting over an international border. This is much more akin, as I was putting in an email to someone last night, I shouldn't quote myself, I should just say it. This is not like even a war with the Plains Indians. Okay, this is like a war with Indians on their reservation after they've already lost and been rounded up. This is like, second wounded knee, not first. You understand? It's a canned hunt. It's a prison riot. It's a fight between a father and a son, or a big bully and a kindergartner, or a... And worse than Nelson and Milhouse. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com. All right. Hey, you guys. Welcome back. Well, God dang it. I was trying to interview Con Hallinan, and I can't get a hold of him. And also, I was trying to interview Nancy Youssef. Nancy Youssef, I think. I can't get a hold of her. This person has not shared their details with you. No Nancy. No Con. I'm pretty sure maybe later I'll get one or the other of them. And then Phil Weiss is going to be here, so you got to stay tuned for that, because he's great, man. But Con Hallinan, man, he's got a new thing all about what's going on in Asia, and I'm thinking, you know, here America's got a problem. Obviously, we have a proxy problem with Israel-Palestine right now. We've got huge problems with our proxy in Iraq and the rise of the Islamic Caliphate. We got America picking a fight with Russia on our eastern border, you know, ever since Ukraine became a state in the Union. And now, you know, maybe always, but now again, more, it looks like there could be a war in Asia, maybe a real one. And one of the things that really raised my eyebrows in here, and I know I don't know enough about this, and I know I do know a little, but they said that China was disputing Japan's claim to Okinawa? Whoa. And in how harsh of terms again, Con? Holy crap. Now, I know that the Okinawans have always considered themselves, conquered by the Japanese rather than, you know, part of we and us and all that kind of thing with them. But belonging to the Chinese, I don't know. How long has it been since China owned Okinawa? Did they ever? I don't know. But, you know, here's the thing of it. Even if you take all of the cynical empire accusations out, money-making, military-industrial complex, bankers servicing government debt, and and all of these things. And you really just boil all foreign policy down to, like, Anne Marie Slaughter's best ideas for how the world should be run when they have their little think tank seminar and that kind of thing, which that is part of it, right? Belief systems and ideologies, consensus is how these doctrines are reached. And the consensus in New York and D.C. by the people with the power about how things should be run is that America must flex ultimate power always, mostly, as they would put it, to reassure our allies that they can go ahead and not arm up and get into wars and preempt their enemies and do whatever crazy things that they might be doing, because they know that we've got their back. And if they know that we've got their back, then their enemies know that we've got their back. And therefore, their enemies won't dare try nothing. Now, that could seem superficially legitimate if you look at, say, the standoff between America and the Soviet Union, or even with Red China in the Cold War. Seems like that might fit, but of course, it ignores the threat of H-bomb use back and forth in those particular cases. That becomes another part of it. That they could strike back, not just that America could nuke them, but that America could lose D.C. and New York if they pushed it too far. That's one aspect of this. But just in general, you can see how it amounts to almost a magical belief on the part of American powers that the rest of the world is sort of like the Israeli belief about the Palestinians, that if you're just, if your strength relative to theirs is so powerful, at some point they will just give up. They will just throw up their hands and lay down on their bellies, and no one will dare resist you again, and it'll be close enough to peace. That's basically the theory. And the truth is that even when it seems like it's working, it could just be a correlation without causation. And from the other way around, you look at it, what it really means is America has made a contract with nations all over this planet that if they ever get into a war with their neighbors, if either of them are ever willing to actually try it, that we will be dragged in, no matter what. Even if it's the breakup of a state like Yugoslavia that was created at Versailles, even if it's only the direct kind of results of American intervention in the first place. And so we keep getting pulled further and further in, basically, entangling alliances. And, you know, no, I'm not saying that we should consider it all an accident. I'm not. But I'm just saying, if you give them the benefit of the doubt that it's all just best intentions to create a regime, and I mean that in the nice way, a regime of collective security on the planet where everybody's interest is caught up in anybody else's war, and so therefore all the pressure is stacked against anybody having one. Doesn't really seem to pan out that way. Again, I think mostly it's the nukes that are keeping the major powers from fighting each other at this point. Well, and increased trade too, hopefully, you know. But anyway, point being, if Con Hallinan was here on the line, he would be explaining about how there's 25 different variables or more going on, different conflicts over in East Asia right now, while all eyes are on the Islamic State, and all eyes are on the Gaza Strip, and all eyes are on East Ukraine, which is really hard for all those different sets of two eyes to be on those three giant conflicts going on right now. Might be missing that there are so many tripwires for war in East Asia right now, they could be the most important thing of all. You can stumble right into war with China, lose your hometown overnight, and wonder as you're, you know, in your last seconds before you're nuked off the face of the earth whether, Obama gotten you into war with the Russians or who, you know? Did the Israelis nuke you for refusing to veto a UN Security Council resolution? Or, you know, what happened? Poof. Anyway, I try not to be that bad of an alarmist because, you know, it's true, man. As John Mueller says, you know, you and your worst case scenarios. Stop believing in worst case scenarios. That's not what usually happens. But it could happen. And people being careless and not pointing out the flaws in theories like benevolent global hegemony and its, you know, younger brother collective security. They're really, you know, spin for the same kind of concepts, really. If we're not, you know, if we just cede all the arguments to these people, they could get us into very real trouble. I mean, seriously, man, pull out your risk game, your game board, and look, and you tell me which all islands belong to Vietnam, China, Japan, the Philippines, and who's willing to fight how hard for which ones and why. For reasons like money or pride or resentment from what the Japanese had done to them in World War II. Throw the Koreans in there, too. Who all owns all of this and who all is willing to go to what degree of war over it? And how willing are you to give up your hometown in a war with China over their dispute with the Philippines over some crappy little island somewhere where there might be some natural gas? What the hell? Anyway, that's just a long way of saying, God dang, I was trying to get Con Hallinan on the show, but I guess don't matter. I pretty much covered it for you there. Well, I do that sometimes. Isn't that strange, though? Someone's asking me, so how's things going on the show lately? Well, there are a lot of wars going on right now. That's what you mean. In the next segment, if I don't get Con Hallinan or Nancy Youssef, I'm going to be talking a lot about the Islamic State. May get back to Palestine issues in a little while. But I got to talk about Ukraine, and I got to talk a little bit with you about Iraq. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. It used to be Iraq. I think it's time to stop calling it Iraq. There's very soon to be independent Kurdistan. There's Arab Shiistan, a.k.a. George W. Bush land. And then there's Osama bin Ladenistan, the Islamo-fascist caliphate that the Republicans created for the Mujahideen. And it now straddles the former border between Iraq and Syria, and I don't know anybody thinks that border will ever exist again. It's done. Iraq is over now. I mean, you knew that America destroyed their whole society 6 years ago, so what's the surprise, right? Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. So, you heard the one about the little girl from, 4 or 5 days ago, who the baby, the unborn baby, survived her mother's death. Her mother was murdered by the Israelis in Gaza. And the doctors saved her, delivered her anyway, and saved her life. They called it the miracle of this and that kind of thing. She survived this massacre, even her mother's killing. But today she died because the Israelis turned off her incubator. Reportedly. Anyway, I don't know. I guess it's just a tweet. I don't know for sure if that's true. I guess we'll find out soon. Be a hell of a claim to make, especially with an incubator involved. We all know about incubators and war propagandas, but there certainly were enough sources for this little baby surviving her mother's death and being delivered and saved by the doctors anyway. I don't know whether it's really true that she died today. But the power sure as hell's out. The Israelis bombed their electricity. And then you know, the headline here breaking from the Associated Press, the White House condemns Israel's shelling of the UN school in the Gaza Strip last night. Yeah, well, so what are you going to do about it, Obama? Nothing. He's not going to do a damn thing about it. You know, everybody's passing around this hoax transcript of this interview or this conversation between Obama and Netanyahu that begins with Obama telling Netanyahu, I demand you stop, and Netanyahu saying no. Yeah, right. First of all, Barack Obama would never say, I demand you stop. And secondly, if he did, and he really meant it, Benjamin Netanyahu would get down on his knees crying and beg and please, I'm sorry, okay. Benjamin Netanyahu and his right-wing fascist government over there, his coalition of nationalist parties even further to the right than him, more genocidal than him, they're nothing without the United States paying their way and vetoing all the Security Council resolutions that oppose them and all that, arming them up with all of our weapons that they turn around and sell to the Chinese anyway. And if Barack Obama, you know what, this happened, this is in Ronald Reagan's memoirs, that he called, I guess it was Menachem Begin, and told him to stop bombing Beirut, and he stopped bombing Beirut in a minute and a half, or 3 minutes went by or something, and that was it. The guns fell silent. Immediately. And Ronald Reagan said to, I don't know, Donald Reagan or whoever, these kooks were standing around him, I didn't know I could do that. I could do that? I can tell the Israelis, hey, stop killing people for a minute, would you? And they'll do it? Yeah. So what's wrong with Barack Obama? Oh, he condemns them bombing a school. Took him 3/4 of a day to even condemn him for doing it. And as long as there's no consequences, such as we're not going to veto resolutions against you anymore. We're not going to stand between you and the Security Council anymore. And we're not going to give you F-16s and F-15s and M-16s and armored personnel carriers and the rest of it anymore. No more money, no more weapons, no more diplomatic cover. You guys are so big and tough. Have a nice life. See how tough you are then. That's how to end the war in the Gaza Strip. That's how to end the siege, which is not even low-level war. It's medium-level war, you know, without the constant bombing campaign. That's how to end the occupation of the Gaza Strip and the West Bank and East Jerusalem. Tell the Israelis, that's it. We've had enough. You know what? We don't want another September 11th. Just because you guys want to murder some kids. We don't need any more of that here. That's done enough to undermine what we all thought we were about around here, you know? And we don't want any more of that. So, go provoke terrorists against your own damn targets. And leave ours out. That's how you end the war. Simple. But you think Barack Obama would do that? Think Barack Obama would say, my fellow Americans, let me tell you a little story of the occupation that's been going on in the occupied territory since 1967. We'll see if the guns don't fall silent at some point during this speech. Let me tell you about the conniving, backstabbing rat Benjamin Netanyahu. Here's video of Benjamin Netanyahu bragging about how he assaulted Bill Clinton in the face. You know, sexually assaulted him. And got away with blue bloody murder. Here's Benjamin Netanyahu saying your support for him is, quote, absurd. Can I get my Hebrew translator in here? Does he in fact say American support for Israel is absurd in Hebrew? Is that the correct translation? Thank you very much. You see, Americans, Benjamin Netanyahu is a snake. Benjamin Netanyahu is a child killer. And all that stuff about him pretending to be the victim, that's not true at all. It's actually a big stupid lie. So, my fellow Americans, we're cutting off all aid to the serial killers that rule the government of Israel, who like to go on canned hunts against tiny, helpless babies all damn day. And so that's the end of that. The American people would say, USA, and screw you, Israel. Your kids aren't going to school tomorrow. You'll still have your kids, but we're not paying for your socialist education system anymore. How about that? Commies. All right. Barack Obama condemns. Barack Obama is the emperor of the planet Earth. But somehow he can't get Israel to stop killing babies. You know what? Just go back to your golf game, cracker. Sucker. All right. So, yeah, Iraq News. What time is it? Oh, it's time to go. When we get back, I don't know if I'll have any of my damn guests on the show today. Nancy Youssef ain't shared her contact details with me. Con Hallinan, boy, me and him got a time zone difficulty rocking right now. I don't know what's going to happen with that. I do plan on talking with my buddy Darren about the coffee. Darren's Coffee at darrenscoffee.com. Two N's. Two R's. One N. Did I say two N's earlier, too? Jesus. Two R's. Darren's Coffee. He's coming up on the show. And Phil Weiss. He's going to redeem this entire crappy show today. The great Phil Weiss. So stay tuned. It's the Scott Horton Show. ScottHorton.org. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders, quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Me. Alright, it's my show. I don't know what the hell happened. All my guests are supposed to be here, man. Maybe one of them will happen. That's alright. Here, Russia delivers combat aircraft to Iraq. Experts wonder whether it'll help or hurt. Remember we talked, this is by Mitchell Prothero and McClatchy. Remember we talked with him last about, it was part of that last conversation, that Baghdadi, Big Daddy, the Caliph, gave his sermon where he identified America and Russia in the same breath as the prime enemies on the planet. And it is true that America and Russia are directly on the side of the mostly Iranian-backed Shiite Arab majority government in Baghdad. Boy, did Frontline leave out all the ethnic cleansing or the sectarian cleansing of Baghdad in their bogus documentary last night. What a joke. Anyway, it's true that Obama and Putin are on the same side in Iraq, the side that George Bush picked, Maliki's side. Russia delivers combat aircraft to Iraq. Experts wonder whether it will help or hurt. Remember what Lande said. Lande, also from McClatchy newspaper, said, yeah, part of the reason Obama would not give weapons to Maliki to fight the rise of ISIS in Iraq was because he continued to allow Iran to overfly Iraq to deliver supplies to Assad for him to fight ISIS there. Huh. Anyway, America is the only ones who can't decide whose side they're on. Everybody else in the region knows exactly what they're doing. The Americans, not so much, I guess. They're trying, they're failing. The Iraqi government Friday confirmed that Russia has begun delivery of attack helicopters and warplanes as part of an arms deal intended to bolster the foundering military effort to retake the nearly half of Iraq lost this year to Islamist militants. Mi-35 helicopter gunships and Su-25 fighter bombers were hastily added in June to a multi-billion dollar arms deal that had been signed before militants from the Islamic State stormed through northern and central Iraq, eventually driving the crumbling Iraqi army to the gates of Baghdad. Efforts to retake territory, notably into Crete and Anbar province to the west of the capital, have been disastrous for the Iraqi army and its Shiite Muslim militia allies, something the government hopes effective air power might change. Despite reports last month that six Russian Su-25s had been hurriedly rushed to Iraq and that Iran had returned a similar number of the same aircraft that it had seized at the outset of the Persian Gulf War in 91, there's been little sign of their use on the battlefield, likely because analysts say there are few trained ground crews, pilots, and infrastructure to support the three-decade-old aircraft. An agreement to train Iraqi pilots to fly modern F-16s from the U.S. appears to have stalled over the security conditions around Iraq's main airfield in Balad, north of Baghdad. The contractors who were to conduct the training were evacuated when Islamic State forces threatened the base. Matthew Henman, a military analyst for IHS Jane's, the British military consultancy, said that the lack of maintenance on the Iranian and Russian jets, first reportedly delivered in June, along with a lack of experienced pilots and ground crews, made it unlikely that they would get any kind of operational use out of those aircraft if they did get them off the ground. The additional Russian deliveries announced Friday on Iraqi state television should change that. The refurbished Su-25s, as well as advanced Mi-35 attack helicopters, presumably will be in flyable condition. Adding to the Iraqis' odd air arsenal that includes helicopters, Cessnas equipped with Hellfire missiles, and improvised barrel bombs pushed from cargo planes. The latter are notoriously unguided weapons that have been accused of causing mass civilian casualties in Syria. But whether that ultimately will help the Iraqi government in Baghdad both push back the Islamic State fighters and win the confidence of Sunni Muslim Iraqis remains uncertain. Anyway, I can't read this whole thing to you. Let's get to the real point here, is that, it's the next story, isn't it? Here's the Raw Story version. You can find the video. I'm not sure if Raw Story has a video. I know they took it off of YouTube. They have the video at the Daily Mail of jihadists executing, I don't know, dozens of Shiites just for being Shiites. I think some accounts said that they were soldiers, but it was not altogether clear that they were all soldiers, I don't think. If you watch the video of them, herding all of these guys into a pit and executing them that they put out yesterday, when I saw it, I was reminded of what Patrick Coburn said about these guys, that they really are like Nazis. They consider the Shia the way the Nazis considered Jews back in the 1930s and 40s. And if it was up to them, they'd just kill them all. It was the absolute worst crime that one could possibly commit in this world is to be a Shia, according to the Islamic State ideologues. Coburn also compares them to the Khmer Rouge. Prothero describes them as school shooters, right? A bunch of crazies, only now they've made strong alliances with Ba'athist military leaders from the old days and that kind of thing. So they're getting their act together better and better. And they're too smart so far. They're too smart to hurdle themselves in large numbers at Baghdad, which they know they can't take. They don't have the numbers to take Baghdad. It took, just as I told you all along, it took the U.S. Army and Marine Corps a few years, four or five years of civil war to help the Badr Brigade and the Mahdi Army kick all the Sunnis out of Baghdad and give it to the Shiites. How the hell is the Islamic State supposed to take it back? Now they could be dumb enough to try and all die trying, but so far they've been too smart for that. They've headed back actually into what was formerly known as Syria and started consolidating their gains there instead. But anyway, to the extremism of these guys massacring the Shia like this, here's my thing of it. I'm not promoting any intervention at all. I'm 100% against it. Can only make it worse. Can only make these guys, the American people's enemies, worse than they already are, and can't stop them, only make them stronger, just like this whole stupid terror war has done. But that's my whole point, is that this whole stupid terror war has changed Al-Qaeda from a group of 200 men into a movement of now thousands and thousands across the planet, well, across, North Africa, down into Nigeria, if you count them, I think you can, certainly across North Africa and the Middle East, and now even with their own state. And yes, it is a crappy little state compared to real states. It's just brand new, and yet there's nobody prepared to stop them. Not yet. So they're winning. They're consolidating their power. And what that really means is prepare for what I just told you to be the world's most lethal talking point in the hands of the war party coming immediately. I mean, you ought to be able to count the seconds off. I don't know what it's taken them so long. I know that Paul Wolfowitz and Dick Cheney and all these guys came out and tried. But I think, I don't know, man. Hell, maybe America really has changed. But it seems, I just can't imagine how they're going to really let the Islamo-fascist caliphate hell-bent on attacking the West that they always pretended existed, that they were creating as they pretended they were fighting it, that they have actually made it exist now. I mean, it's still, I know, it's only Western, Northwestern Iraq and Eastern Syria. It's not, you know, all of Islam against us and all this crap like the neocon liars say. It never was, never could be. But it is Osama bin Ladenistan over there right now, and in a way far beyond the way it ever was in the worst days of the Iraq War. In the worst days of the Iraq War, Al-Qaeda in Iraq was still just a small percentage of the insurgency. They were not the bosses. When they called themselves the Islamic State, they got kicked out. They got kicked down and out by the Sunni tribes. But those days are over. They're the ones running things now. And there's no state around them, and no Sunni tribe seems prepared to challenge them either. And certainly not Maliki, who's just been kicked the hell back out of Tikrit. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here. Are you a libertarian and or peacenik? Live in North America? If you want, you could hire me to come and give a speech to your group. I'm good on the terror, war, and intervention, civil liberty stuff, blaming Woodrow Wilson for everything bad in the world, Iran, central banking, political realignment, and, well, you know, everything. I can teach markets to liberals and peace to the right. Just watch me. Check out scotthorton.org/speeches for some examples and email me scott@scotthorton.org for more information. See you there. Hey, I'm Scott. This is my show, Scott Horton Show. Coming up on the show, we'll have Philip Weiss talk about the situation in Palestine. But anyway, yeah. Maliki's regime kicked the hell out of Tikrit. Hundreds executed by the Islamic State. And I guess all I'm saying is I just can't see how any president, even Obama, can resist going back to Iraq. And it's going to have to mean ground troops too, because you can't really do an air war without ground troops. I mean, you need at least special forces to point the laser pointers, you know? And, well, geez, if we're going to send special force, if we're going to send the JSOC, we're going to need the SOCOM to protect the JSOC. And if we're going to send the SOCOM, we're going to need the Army to protect them. And if we're going to send the Army, well, of course, we're going to need the Air Force to protect the Army. And you know how these things go. And I just don't know how they can not do it. Hell, we're going to hear, you know, myths of spinning Islamist centrifuges here any minute now, right? I don't know. So, I don't know if there's a way. Maybe politically, it's just not doable. And Obama doesn't want to do it, and the Pentagon doesn't want to do it, and maybe they are just going to let there be the rise of the Islamic State. Headed by this Omar Baku Baghdadi guy, but I can't help but think that, no, they're going to start bombing him soon. And even if somehow Obama resists, then Hillary or Jeb or Rand Paul or whoever's next will do it. They're going to really let there be an Osama bin Ladenistan? And by the way, speaking of Osama bin Laden, what's up with Ayman al-Zawahiri now? This is like the comic sideshow to this whole thing, if there's anything funny about it. This idiot, he's no politician at all. He went and started bossing this Baghdadi guy around, but he had no way to enforce it. So Baghdadi's position was, no. Zawahiri told him, hey, go back to Iraq, stay out of Syria, leave Syria to the al-Nusra front. Now that you've split off, go back to Iraq. And he said, no, I don't want to. And then he waited a little while, went back to Iraq anyway. And all he proved that was that Zawahiri's a clown. Zawahiri can't do nothing from where he is. What's he going to do? So now what's Zawahiri going to do? He's going to put out a message here soon. But after all the gains that the Islamic State has made so far, he's going to denounce them? That's going to marginalize him even further. He's making... Al-Qaeda is... It's gone now. I saw where supposedly some leaders of Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb denounced the Islamic State. How long do you think that's going to last? You know, Nusra tried to do that too for a little while. Now al-Nusra in Syria is all declaring their loyalty to the Islamic State. Why? They're winning. And you know the Saudis, officially and unofficially, are bankrolling the hell out of this thing and send as many mujahideen as they can up there to fight. And hell, there are plenty of little boys who grew up being terrorized by the USA enough. They're battle-hardened, ready to fight right now. I was 10 when the Americans came and killed my first family member. Hand me that AK-47, they say. Hand me that black flag. So, you know, I don't know, man. I'm paranoid as hell about it. And you know what? Here's what really extra super makes me paranoid about it is I'm paranoid that the state, our government, is right when they try to frighten us with this. Some of these guys have Western passports and could try to come here and attack us now thing. I think that's a real threat. I think that's a real problem. And I think, and sorry for saying I think over and over again, that's probably not very good radio. I think this. Jeez, guys, it seems to me like if I was Omar Bakr Abu Shubaduba five name Baghdadi, I would attack America. It makes perfect sense for them to attack America, to try to provoke what I'm trying to warn against. Further American intervention there. In fact, Mitchell Prothero talked about CIA and special forces building up at that base in Kurdistan. As soon as they're out there flying drones and doing night raids and selected assassinations and whatever, at that point, we're all in anyway. We've directed, I mean, as though they don't already have their sights on the U.S. for past grievances, including the last war there. But... you know, the first couple of night raids, and you've basically, the U.S. government has basically made all 300 million Americans fair game again in this war. I don't mean fair, unfair game, but made us targets of these guys. And it makes perfect sense for them to say, yeah, come on back to the Sunni Triangle, dude. Yeah. let's redo the good old days of you bleeding to death in our sand. Remember Zawahiri said... back when he was still somebody, haha. He said, no, we don't want the Americans to leave yet. We don't want them to leave Iraq until 100,000 have died. Till many more billions have been spent. Till their bank is broken. And their will to continue to fight us is gone. And then we can finally be rid of them altogether. It's exactly what Bin Laden's fish food corpse would have. And so it makes perfect sense for Baghdadi from a strategic logic point of view. It makes perfect sense for him to send Mujahideen west to blow up targets in Western Europe. And hey, why not American targets in Western Europe? Seems the smart thing to do from his point of view, to recreate the worst years of the American-Iraq war against the Sunni insurgency. Because why not? And so, you know, it'll just help rally thousands more to their cause. Just be a whole new magnet for the revolt. And I'm almost ashamed of how prescient I was about all this just in the weeks leading up to this thing. You can find not the last interview of Michael Scheuer, but the one before that where he was saying, Nigeria, 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 that Boko Haram gets too far out of control. We might find ourselves in a real war for those oil resources. That's a huge portion of America's daily imports there. And I said, yeah, but still, look back the other way. The rising Islamo-fascist caliphate, they hadn't marched on Mosul yet, but it was already de facto. The Western Northwestern Territory was already out of Maliki's hands. Fallujah was already independent. The Iraqi army had already largely withdrawn from the Northwest anyway, as Coburn had been reporting for a year on this show and in The Independent. And, of course, all of eastern Syria out in the countryside out there anyway, and Raqqa's belonged to ISIS and the Mujahideen there. So I said, this is where the war's coming. And anyway, I'm sorry, man. I'm afraid somehow I'm going to jinx it and make this thing happen. So far, Obama has not deployed the bombers. Is it possible that good sense is holding him back? Then again, it took Bush, I don't know, what, 6-7 weeks before he started bombing Afghanistan after 9/11? That was a little suspicious, wasn't it? And finally started bombing him. I don't know. 6 weeks, I guess. Anyway, don't let your boy join the army. Not now. I don't care what the recruiter says about the wars are over and all of that. I don't think so. All of the Bush regime's propaganda and wholesale lies are all coming true now. All right. Later on the show, Phil Weiss, here in just a few minutes, we'll be talking with Darren from the coffee place because, hey, man, I need to sell you guys some coffee so that he'll pay me for the ads on the show so that I can do the show. So it'll be just a short little one-segment interview of Darren about his great coffee. It really is good. And that's coming up in a second. And then after that, Philip Weiss. And, I mean, hell, maybe I can get 10 minutes with Con Hallinan or Nancy Youssef in there somewhere. But is it me? I don't think it's me that's got the time zone difficulties today. I can count on my fingers to L.A. and I can count on my fingers to London from here. I think Cairo is one or two time zones from London, but that's all right. I said London, you count from London, right? All right, well, anyway, these things happen, live radio, but well, I guess we'll have them both on tomorrow, won't we? I'm Scott Horton. This is the Scott Horton Show. Stay tuned if you want. ScottHorton.org. Click on things over there, would you? Spend money on those ads there. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation. Edited by libertarian purist Sheldon Richman, The Future of Freedom brings you the best of our movement. Featuring articles by Richman, Jacob Hornberger, James Bovard, and many more, The Future of Freedom stands for peace and liberty and against our criminal world empire and Leviathan state. Subscribe today. It's just $25 per year for the back pocket size print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's The Future of Freedom at fff.org/subscribe. Peace and freedom. Thank you. All right, you guys. Welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, Scott Horton Show. Oh, crap. I'm supposed to have Darren on the phone. I forgot. Well, I'll call him in 10 minutes. Boy, I suck at radio today. It's not all my fault, but mostly, yeah. Anyway. So, listen, I got to talk about the Ukraine thing. Of course, there's a major offensive going on. The government is attacking Donetsk and the Americans are pretending like they're calling for a ceasefire, but they're not really, I guess. I don't know. And, of course, on CNN, it's nothing but scary pictures of Putin. They don't show you any of the dead civilians from the anti-terror campaign going on in eastern Ukraine at all. They don't explain what the hell is going on at all. They just would have you believe, yeah, them damn Russians did something. That Putin, he's real mean, and he's the head of the damn Russians, and they did a damn terrible thing, and now what are we going to do about it? That's what's going on here. But it's such a lie. It's such a stupid lie. America is trying to absorb Ukraine into the Borg, into our benevolent global hegemony, and the Russians are resisting. This entire crap about, oh, look, everybody, a boogeyman. Bin Laden's dead. We're afraid to send our guys back to fight Baghdadi, so here, Putin, we can sell some jet fighters that way. Look, everybody, a big, scary boogeyman that's going to hurt you if we're not here to protect you. Yeah, we keep hearing this from you guys. It keeps getting less and less credible all the time. anyone can look to, take a look at what's going on here. Ted Snyder had a great article we ran on antiwar.com just a couple of days ago about, you know, people omitting the history as they tell the story here. It doesn't matter whether you want to go back 10 years or whether you just want to go back 6 months. Even if you just go back 6 months, what happened was the Ukrainian government wanted to sign a trade deal with Russia and the EU. And the Americans and the EU insisted, no, it has to be one or the other. So the Ukrainians chose the Russian deal because it was the better deal. And so, yes, that pissed off a lot of people in Western Ukraine who didn't support the president at the time. But it also meant that the American NGO regime change machine went into full swing and helped support all the activists on the Maidan in their protests. And, of course, completely ignored the fact, I don't know the truth about their supposed training in Poland and whatever, you know, maybe there is something to that. But at the very least, they completely downplayed the role of the right sector and Svoboda Nazis. Legit. I mean, not in the sense that ISIS is like the Nazis. Like, no, really, these guys love Hitler and say so. They're the proud Banderists. He was the head of the Ukrainian SS. And yes, who helped perpetrate the Holocaust against Jews and Poles in Ukraine during World War II. And the Svoboda, that means freedom, but it used to be the Social National Party. Ha ha ha. Yeah, like National Socialists, get it? And the right sector, these guys, they're the ones who did the coup d'etat. They're the ones who seized the government buildings after the president that was being protested against agreed to new elections, but also to pull the police back from the town square where they were protesting in Kiev. And so the Nazis seized the government, and then the Americans and the European governments put the screws on all the Ukrainian oligarchs that they're going to seize all their foreign bank accounts if they don't sacrifice Yanukovych, the president at the time, and so they did sacrifice him, and that was how they accomplished the coup in February of this year. They don't tell any of that. They don't say anything about how the first thing they did was change the law to remove Russian as an official language of Ukraine, even though the majority of the people of Ukraine speak Russian. And yes, that is a legacy of the totalitarian communists, but still, it's true. And that was, you know, the first signal of the conflict to come there, of the attitude of the new coup d'etat government. They did not reach out and say, okay, listen, we overthrew the government, the president that you guys preferred and replaced him. However, now let's begin to compromise and heal and move forward as fellow Ukrainians. There was none of that at all. They made their intentions plain from the very beginning, and then the people of the East resisted. And, in fact, what they did, and yes, I'm sure the Russian government has been helping coordinate this and whatever, but what they did was the exact same thing. They just played the mirror image game. They just occupied the local town buildings and stuff. Said, we don't recognize the authority of the coup government of Ukraine. And then, of course, the Russians left their bases that they already had on the Crimean Peninsula. They didn't invade it. They were already there. But they left their bases and exercised a monopoly of force over the whole peninsula, which is Puerto Rico to Ukraine. It's not exactly, you know, Ukraine, like, you know, as though they had seized Massachusetts from America, something like that. You know, this was, I'm not saying a holy thing that they did or anything like that. I'm not for state governments existing anywhere in the world, much less doing things to anyone. However, it was simply a reaction to the provocative American foreign policy. As they're talking out loud about, yeah, one day we want to go ahead and bring Ukraine into NATO. Well, what's NATO? NATO is a military alliance. Bring them into NATO means stationing American weaponry there, training up their military to use Lockheed products and probably including basing American soldiers there, and also declaring in writing that anytime Ukraine gets in a conflict with any other state, that an attack on, well, not any time, but any attack on them would be treated as an attack on the United States. That's what NATO means, a full-scale military alliance, a war guarantee that the Ukrainian government, whoever rules next in Kiev, Nazi or not, they will decide whether America goes to war with Russia. That's what that really means. They would have the ability to decide, to pick a fight that would involve us. You trade your hometown for Kiev or Odessa, and my wife is from Odessa. I'm not, you know, Odessa is not some alien planet to me. It's a real place full of real people, including, you know, some of her extended family to this day. But I'm not trading Austin, Texas for it, and I'm not letting the half-neo-Nazi government in Kiev, not even neo-Nazi, just half-Nazi government in Kiev decide these things for me, I don't think. Oh, but look at Putin. He has such a serious face when they show his face on TV. So I guess what? Ought to hide under my desk. Because this very serious-faced man is the president of Russia. And you know what? Yeah, he sucks. He's an authoritarian. He's a right-wing Republican. And he would be, you know, pretty far to the right in today's American Republican Party. But he's not a Nazi. And he's not a communist. And if we're grading the Russian government on a curve at all, he's Thomas freaking Jefferson. Are you kidding me? Do you know about the communists? And plotting to revive the Soviet Empire is simply stupid propaganda. It's just a dishonest lie. The only people who really believe that are stupid idiots who have been fooled by liars. But where people write serious things to each other, like at the National Interest and Foreign Affairs, you know, all these hoity-toity professional PhD types and whatever, they all agree that they're not even necessarily, and I don't know exactly their slippery definitions, but I've read a lot of things, and they're not even trying to be a major power. They're just trying to be a power. They're trying to be a regional power. Never mind a superpower or a global hegemon like the United States or like the Soviet Union used to be. They have no ability to reconquer all of Eastern Europe and Southern Asia. Give me a break. It's crazy. It's just not true, and it's not on their agenda. Not on Putin's agenda. After America gets him overthrown and who comes next, I don't know. I guess we'll see then.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
I love this song. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. Oh man, that's good. All right, joining me on the phone is Darren Marion, the founder and operator of Darren's Coffee Company. That's darrenscoffee.com. Two R's in Darren's. I tried it with one R, it didn't work. Anyway, welcome back to the show. How are you doing, Darren?
I'm doing real good, man. I'm real good.
Good. Happy to have you here. You got to double check your URL forwarding there, man. We got to get all different spellings of Darren's to work there.
Yeah, as soon as you said that, I was like, oh, man, yeah.
It smells so good. All right, so okay, the deal cool. is, I'm a Folgers guy, man, because I'm a bum, you know. I got to drink coffee, but it ain't any good. Sometimes McDonald's, you know, if the wife goes and gets McDonald's. Anyway, but then you sent me these bags of coffee. I went out and bought a grinder because I lost mine somewhere in a move at one point. But so I'm drinking the house blend now. I have not yet gotten to the iron roast and the Ethiopia. But I am sitting here smelling the bags of the iron roast and Ethiopia now. And they smell really, really good. So tell me, Darren, about how you got in the coffee business.
I hated what I did for a living, and I wanted to do something completely different, man. So I always thought about kind of what made people smile. I wanted to do something that made people smile. And when I look back to what a happy time in my life, it would be every Saturday morning when my grandfather would have everybody over. And he'd make everybody coffee, bacon, eggs, toast. And the kids would have our sugar and milk and a little bit of coffee taste. So let me figure, no matter what, if people, even if they don't like the taste of coffee, they usually like the smell of coffee. They have some kind of fine memory or fond memory mm-hmm. around it. So that's what cool. I want. That's got me into it.
That's good, man. And how long ago was that? And how's business going?
Man, it was back in 2010. I went out and I was working for Starbucks. People started, I was a coffee master. And I was like, I wanted to taste everything, and I was part of the process, knowing what coffee tasted like. And I usually noticed that it started to all taste the same, and I wanted to see kind of what you know, if I could do it myself. So went out and took a cast iron skillet and a whisk and sent my wife out of the house, came back. The house was smoky, but we came back in, and it was like, she tasted it and was like, what is this? And I was like, it's fresh. This is freshly roasted coffee, and it tasted like a kind of like a wild punch. So at that point, I started
like
taking
what?
It into people, like a wild fruit punch.
Uh-huh.
Then I started to taste, you know, take it into work and have people taste it. Eventually, a guy gave me some money for it, and then I went out and got some bootleg some bootleg cards, you know, just basic Vistaprint cards, you know, and was like, hey, this is Darren's Coffee. So that was back in 2010.
That's cool, man. It sounds like some fake American dream story, only in real life, huh?
Yeah, there you go, man. Got it.
That's cool. And so, and now you're out of Indiana. Where in Indiana again?
Just north of Indianapolis in Zionsville, Indiana.
Uh-huh.
So it actually was rated the place of lowest crime in the state of Indiana.
Oh,
so
that's nice.
City in Indiana.
Cool. Well, hey, man, so listen, I got
to
tell you that, first of all, I really like the coffee. I really do. I'm not just saying that because you're bribing me to say that. It's really great, and I really appreciate you sending me at least a sample. I hope I can get on the flow, you know, like a skateboarder's sponsored am or something, you know.
Yeah.
Get some more coffee to drink around here. But thank you very much for the coffee. Thank you very much for supporting the show. And I do hope that this will, you know, help nudge those sales up a little bit more and get people involved in it. And now, and there's a deal, right? If they're fans
right.
of the show and they use promo code Scott, then what?
It's free shipping.
Free shipping. How much is shipping on a couple of bags of coffee anyway?
Normally I would charge a flat rate of $6.25. Mm-hmm. Which is still,
oh, so
you know,
yeah, that's good. So the deal before was save $2, and you're telling me that basically minimum the shipping was $6 anyway for just a bag.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. So I was like, you know, let's see what we can do to make something a little more fair.
Yeah, that's way better than the $2 off that we're offering in the. I got to recut a new commercial for you there. Sorry.
Cool,
but,
man.
But yeah, man. So so that's really cool. I'm first of all, I'm really glad for the fact that you're so successful at this. I like hearing just stories like that of people figuring out what they want to do and how to do it, you know, and actually getting the work done. I sort of feel like that's what I'm missing around here. But anyway, but yeah, that's great. And I do hope that people just go to my website, scotthorton.org. Of course, you'll find the logo for Darren's Coffee right there on the right-hand side of the page. And now what all different kinds of coffee you got? A bunch? What, you got about a minute and a half still to talk?
Yeah. I got like four or five different blends. All in all, I carry 42 different coffees, but I don't keep them all listed on my site. Because it kind of overwhelms people, and for some odd reason, they don't like choice. So I kind of limit to my blends out there, and my blends, they're really, really good. I deal only in specialty grade coffee, which is top 2% of coffee in the world. So it's all literally, it's graded excellent by the Specialty Coffee Association of America. So
cool. I didn't even know there was one, but I guess I'm not surprised.
There you go, man.
All right, cool. All right, you know, I admit I'm not some yuppie, and I'm not saying you are, but I'm just saying I don't have a background in being judgmental about different coffee flavors other than I really don't like that French roasty stuff. I don't like no cream in my coffee, you know, just a little sugar kind of thing. But
yeah, that's cool.
I don't like nothing in terms of like wild flavored with berries and whatever crap like somebody's mom drinks. But as far as, you know, different kinds of black coffee, I don't really know. But I do know I like this a hell of a lot better than the Folgers I've been drinking out of a can. I'll tell you that.
I'm sure you do, man.
It's great. And look, I mean, with the free shipping and everything, it all works out, right? So
Yeah, man. It does, man.
Yeah.
It all
so,
works out.
This is a smart way for people to get coffee. You know what you ought to do, too? You ought to sell it on Amazon.com.
Yeah. Working on that now, man.
Yeah, there you go. And then people can buy Darren's coffee and Amazon.com through ScottHorton.org all at the same time, and everybody gets a kickback, and we're all rich. And keep doing anti-government radio shows. And waking up in the morning. I mean, honestly, I'm just no good in the morning at all without coffee. I need it. It's not just a matter of taste, although it's that too. But I'm like one of them alcoholics only for coffee, Darren. And
well, okay.
I'm relying on you to keep me caffeinated. All right.
Well, that's the job, man. Second most traded commodity in the world.
Yep. Yeah. Well, pretty close anyway. I guess we'll see once they get to more legalized weed here. But
yeah.
All right.
There you go.
Well, right. thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for tolerating me, you know, rambling on as I do, and thanks for supporting the show, and thanks for brewing such great coffee, Darren. Appreciate it.
All right, on, man.
All right, y'all. That's Darren Marion. He's at darrenscoffee.com. Two R's, although I'm sure he's going to fix the redirect there real fast. Two R's, but darrenscoffee.com for Darren's Coffee Company. Yeah, okay, I'm going to sell out, but I believe in coffee, okay? It's not like I'm advertising, you know, Lockheed stock or government bonds or something, you know. We'll be right back in just a second. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here, and I'm so excited about Commodity Discs from CommodityDiscs.com. They're one-ounce silver pieces with a QR code engraved on the backside. Scan the code with your phone and get the instant spot price. Commodity Discs are paving the way forward for the alternative currency community in America and around the world. The QR code Commodity Disc. Technology has now finally made a real free market silver currency viable. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one free. That's CommodityDiscs.com. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. And the next guest on the show is Philip Weiss. He keeps the all-important blog Mondo Weiss, The War of Ideas in the Middle East, and he's got a great group of writers over there, including Adam Horowitz and Alex Kane and a whole bunch of others there. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Good, Scott. How you doing?
Sorry. You can tell I'm a little bit distracted. I'm doing okay. Thank you for joining us. Listen, so you guys are doing such great coverage of Israel's war on Gaza. If it's got to be called a war, I think I'll put it that way.
I like it.
So thank you for that. I really do appreciate it. And it's important, the voices that you give access to over there and all that, too. So could you please tell us the latest on the ceasefires? Who's proposing and accepting and rejecting what? It's hard for me to keep track over here, Phil.
I don't know. I think the latest, I haven't followed that real closely. The latest I heard is that Hamas had rejected a ceasefire proposal from yesterday, but I don't know what the latest is today. I know that for Hamas, it's essential that they get something out of this ceasefire, that they get a lifting of the blockade that has been with them for 7 years now, that has not allowed Palestinians to live normal lives, anything like a normal life under occupation. So I think both sides are kind of dug in at this point. Palestinians in Gaza have lost so much at this point. Nearly as many people as died in Cass Lead 5 years ago, and they want something for that. They want some change and in conditions. So I think that there is some willingness on the part of the people there to continue this fight from their standpoint, from the Hamas standpoint. If they can't get an improvement in conditions.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, to me, it's frustrating just because it means that this slaughter will continue. And I can understand, though, of course, from their position, and I don't mean Hamas, but I mean the people of Palestine, why at some point they would say, you know, the status quo is unacceptable. We'd rather keep fighting. And yet there's no fight to it at all. It's just a slaughter, a one-sided slaughter. It's just going on. And in fact, I heard a CNN reporter live on CNN say, I'm 90% sure, Phil, it was CNN, I guess, that, you know, quoting Palestinian civilians as taking that exact position they just said, not Hamas members taking that position, but yeah. Palestinian civilians saying, no, we'll go ahead and keep fighting, thanks, rather than, you know, lay down to your terms that are at least as bad as we were off 4 weeks ago.
Yeah. Now, and I would say that I think that I heard that on NBC, actually, or a similar line on NBC. And I think that the good thing about this conflict this time, it's a horrifying thing to have to say, but what all these deaths and injuries are producing is a change in the Western attitude. And so today, we saw the White House, according to the Associated Press, the White House today condemned the Israeli attack on a Palestinian school that killed, I think, a dozen or maybe more people yesterday. And this is the first time that I've seen the White House condemn an Israeli attack. And it was the way for that was paved by Obama expressing anger about all the Palestinian deaths earlier this week to Netanyahu. So we're seeing a shift in the American mainstream, and I think that's vital. It's the shift that happened on the left and the center and, you know, on the libertarian right, too, with the Cass Lead massacre of 5 years ago, I think is beginning to happen now in the mainstream.
Yeah. All right, now I'm sorry, it is speculation, and I'm just asking you to speculate, but do you have a educated guess as to the tension between Obama and Netanyahu there and just how stern a lecture Obama gave him? Of course, there was what everybody seems to agree was a hoax transcript of a phone call between them that begins with Obama saying, "I demand that you stop," and Netanyahu saying no. And that was why I knew it was a hoax right away, was because it seems like Obama would never talk to Netanyahu like that. But then I wonder, well, I don't know, how stern of a talking to do you think Obama gave him, and just how stern resistance do you think he's getting back? How do you measure that? I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe
well,
it's a stupid
love
question. I'm sorry, but
I love the hoax. You know, if it is a hoax, I don't know. I mean, it reads. To me, it makes sense that they would be acting out those parts in that way. That being said, what we know for a fact is that this week, the Netanyahu government high officials have characterized John Kerry as aiding terrorists by pushing for a ceasefire on terms that are you know, favorable to the people of Gaza, or allow people to live a normal life in Gaza. So, and John Kerry struck back yesterday saying, "Hey, I have I had a great voting record for Israel when I was in the Senate for 29 years or whatever." And so you see this kind of open hostility between Israel and the United States. That's a great thing. I think that it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing that the special relationship might actually begin to fall apart, and we will see this ally for what it is, which is a rogue militant state.
It's funny, though, that all Kerry can say is, "Nuh-uh, I'm more Likud than Likud," instead of, "Hey, listen, in this case, you guys are really out of line, and you need to get back in it," you know?
Right. Although, you know, he's a diplomat, and presumably in private, he's saying some of that. And I think from my lips to God's ears, but I think they've had it with these folks. They warned them again and again that they were alienating world opinion with their behavior and their occupation. And maybe now they're finally washing their hands of Israel. Obviously, the Congress is bought and paid for. The media has a lot of embeds. But we're reaching a point where even the media, you cited CNN, I cited NBC. the politicians will be able to take a stance against Israel or critical of Israel when the media begin to give them cover. And that is what we're seeing. We are seeing endless images of Palestinian children blown to smithereens by the Israeli forces. And the Israeli government and its friends in the United States are involved in this absurd question of whether you're showcasing civilian deaths or overplaying them on the media. When you begin that type of argument, you have lost, and I think Israel has lost.
Yeah, got that right. Yeah, every time one of these Israeli trolls tries to come after me on Twitter, I just tell them, keep typing, pal. You're just digging your own grave. Ridiculous.
That's great. That's great.
So, okay, I guess, you know... my former stupid question there a minute ago is coming from a presumption that Obama's the president of the world. He is the global dictator. What he says goes, and I'm thinking back, and you could probably help me straighten out my anecdote a little bit, but wasn't there something like Ronald Reagan called Menachem Begin and said, stop bombing Beirut, and the guns fell silent within a minute and a half or so, and Reagan said, hey, I could do that? Wow, cool. And I guess I just thought that if any American president says, hey, listen, now I'm not asking you, now I'm telling you, knock it off, that that would be the end of that, because how can the Israelis resist that when America is all they got?
Well, I agree with you about the logic. I didn't know about the Reagan-Begin
I may have my prime minister wrong, but
well, I like it, but no, I mean, that was the right era. But I think, you know...
Yeah, I probably screwed that up.
Well, we're dealing with a spineless... I mean, our president has shown himself to be spineless on a number of occasions, and yet we know that he cannot get along with Netanyahu. We can see it in the body language. We can hear it from the inside reports. This guy does. They don't get along, and they don't get along for good reason, because Netanyahu is destroying our image in the world. And
he's not worried about it. That's the thing of it. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We'll be right back. Just one sec.
Great.
You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still. If you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Philip Weiss from MondoWeiss.net. And, of course, you can find Max Blumenthal and Alex Kane and all kinds of different people writing over there as well. Annie Robinson. All right, now, Phil, let me ask you about this. It's a controversial kind of thing, and I guess, again, I'm asking you not necessarily for cold hard facts, unless you got some great, you know, quotes and footnotes or something like that, but maybe more I'm asking for your impression of what you think is going on here. And that's the question of precision strikes that happen to kill a lot of kids because there's a lot of kids around, or whether perhaps the policy is, like it sort of seems on its face, to be to kill the kids, to target families and to destroy them in order to terrorize the parents of the dead kids into changing their politics from Hamas to something else. What do you think?
I guess you can't be sure in these circumstances. And Richard Goldstone, the last time around, when did a major report on it and said Israel was targeting civilians, then retracted that allegation later. I think what's happening, my best judgment here, is that Israel is showing complete disregard for civilians who are near Hamas targets. That's basically what's going on. They're targeting Hamas militants or officials whom they regard as bad actors, and they are showing not any care for whether civilians are in the area, in the house, etc. And in some cases, so I don't think that they are willfully trying to kill children. I think they understand that there is a liability in that in a lot of ways, including it's war crime. I mean, they're making a lot of war crimes. But I think the war crime that they are guilty of is showing a lack of discrimination, lack of a sense of proportion when they are going after a Hamas target.
Yeah, but what about hitting these UN schools and these refugee camps and all this stuff?
You know, I think that once again they would say that there are rockets being fired from nearby or whatever, but I think or that rockets have been stored in schools. I think they're just showing contempt for civilian life when they're going after a military target. And in some cases, I don't think they're being that precise. That's just the nature of their operation. And now, to be clear, there have been some documented instances of actual revenge killings of civilians. And when there was a massacre last week in Shujaiya, outside of Gaza City, 60 people were killed. Apparently, that followed on a bunch of Israeli soldiers being killed the day before. So in that case, I think you can, and there's evidence that they were shooting at civilians who were trying to find their families. So in that case, they blame the neighborhood for the fact that there are Hamas strongholds in that neighborhood. So I think that there are cases that are closer to your second model, which is, hey, you folks are Hamas sympathizers, we're going to blow you all up. I guess there is evidence of that in, you know, a few instances, or a couple of instances anyway. Mm-hmm.
Well, and nothing unique to Israel. I mean, they would just be copying America's policy toward Iraq, for one example, or, you know, I guess.
Well, remind me, how many civilians did we go after in Iraq?
Well, Bill Clinton starved and strangled about 1 million of them to death, half of them mm-hmm. children, of course, Madeleine famously said it was worth it, and what it was worth it, the policy explicitly was to make the people, the civilians of Iraq, so desperate that they would revolt, mm-hmm. they would blame Saddam and revolt against him, which, of course, made no sense, but didn't
collective
matter.
Punishment. And you know,
I'm sure you saw that article in the Daily Beast where the guy Jesse Rosenfeld,
Jesse Rosenfeld, good guy.
Rosenfeld. He says, he quotes a professor here, I don't believe he's being critical. I think he's just explaining the rationale, saying that, well, you know, we're trying to create enough Palestinian suffering so the Gazans will rise up against Hamas or force the leaders to come to terms with Israel, on Israel's terms, obviously.
They're crazy. So, and then someone else is saying, I see Peter Beinart saying, well, we have to empower the people in Palestinian life who want to reject Hamas and recognize Israel. Well, good luck. You're not going to do it through this kind of conduct. You know, you're going to empower Hamas. That's what's happening here. And furthermore, I want to say I was at a pro-Israel rally 2 days ago in New York City, and I heard the president of the New York Board of Rabbis, David Seth Kirshner, he said, if you voted for Hamas, you can be killed. So he said, his quote was, if you participated in an election process in which Hamas was elevated, i.e. the election in 2006, then you are not a civilian. So that would justify killing anyone who supported Hamas.
Yeah, and which, of course, they don't know who all voted for Hamas. What they mean is blank check for collective guilt of everyone in Gaza, whatever age they were at voting time 2006 and whatever ballot they cast.
Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy.
And that's what they mean about all this human shields thing. You know, it's not very thin propaganda where they're, you know, on one hand, they're just blaming Hamas. You know, on the surface, they're blaming Hamas for getting the kids killed. But what they're really doing is they're writing themselves a permission slip. They're saying, therefore, it's okay for us to go ahead and shoot, because what are we supposed to do? All of our targets are hidden by human shields, so
right.
Hidden behind them, so we have to go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's highly indiscriminate. And you know, if it were Jews, if these people were terrorists operating in a Jewish neighborhood, they would never be so ham-handed and sort of haphazard. They would be they would go in and they would take a lot more risks. But no, these are Palestinians, so they don't count.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an amazing thing. And of course, you take this entire situation and pretend that the history had gone the other way for a minute, that this is now the Jews of Palestine are rounded up in the Gaza concentration camp and treated this way by the Palestinian Christians and Arabs. Holy crap, would there be a war going on right now?
Oh, my Lord. Yeah, of course.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Like, hey, that would be wrong. What the hell?
Right, but you see people, Richard Cohen in the Washington Post saying, Jews are the Israelis are the real victims here. Excuse me, you know? They're the victims. It's nuts.
Well, it's back to what you're saying about how desperate they're getting. You know you're losing when John Kerry and Israel's defense has to say, you know, all of Israel is under siege right now by Gaza. Or just, come on now, John.
Right, right.
You and I both know that ain't quite the way it is, you know?
But you see the changes in the mainstream media that I see.
Sure, I was just going to ask you, did you see the clip of Andrea Mitchell asking the Israeli ambassador whether Israel is losing its soul over this?
Oh, no. When did she say that?
I guess it was yesterday.
Wow.
I'll email you the link.
Wow,
here.
That's great.
I'll tweet it to you. It's a Mediaite link. And
great.
He says, no, of course not. We're being so restrained, and we're only doing what we have to do and whatever. But she actually seems pretty concerned that she's heard some opposing points of view here lately, and she's wondering whether there might be anything to them.
You know, I think what's essential to understand here is that, you know, Andrea Mitchell, who, for all I know, I suspect is a Zionist at heart. You know, she believes in the need for a Jewish state. Like many people in the media, many Jews in the media, she believes in it. I don't. I'm a Jew in the media. I don't believe in it. But I think that she is an American, and she sees things from an American perspective, and this is a different country. They believe all this stuff. They believe all this crap. And this is the great thing about this conflict, is that Americans are seeing these people are nuts. They do not understand what they're doing. They have convinced themselves that it's a national psychosis about we're under attack, and we don't have to subscribe to it anymore. And that is the great thing about Andrea Mitchell's question. So I think that's going to be happening on a much broader basis. And, you know, then these people will have to look back and say, well, when did Israel lose its soul? Maybe it had something to do with ethnically cleansing 700,000 people to form the state in the first place and then make a declaration of independence, of equality at when it was when the state was announced. So there's no equality there. There's never been equality there.
Yeah. Well, it seems like if they even tried to have an honest peace process this whole time since the end of the Cold War era, for example, even taking into account 67, you can only go back with your counterfactual so far, right? But say at the end of the Cold War with Oslo and this and that, if they'd actually just gone ahead and given up the West Bank and Gaza and tried to have a peaceful, let's get along kind of attitude, an honest one, how different things could have been, you know?
Take the money and run. They didn't do it, and now they're losing.
Yep, there you go. All right, y'all. That's the great Philip Weiss. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks,
I sure appreciate it, Philip.
Okay.
All right. That's MondoWeiss.net, guys. MondoWeiss.net and at MondoWeiss, of course, on Twitter as well. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.